time for Aki's A-List. From the mind of the man who understands the four P's of Waddle's world, Aki's A-List. A-List. The top questions and topics floating around in Tyler Aki's mind.
Are these really the questions that I was called here to answer?
Aki's A-List on ESPN Chicago.
One of my favorite segments that we have daily on this show. I was asking you, Connor, if we've ever asked you about whether or not you could identify the sound effect.
The sound effect. Well, I know that it's
Aki's A-List.
It's Jack Nicholson doing the few good
but
men.
The sound of...
I was throwing my headphones on during the intro, which is real pro behavior. So, no, I missed the sound effects.
Okay.
I don't know.
I just didn't know because this was a conversation that we've had many times before. If anyone could guess exactly what Jeff Meller put together.
I'll have to listen again?
Yeah, next time.
Maybe tomorrow.
Okay, cool.
All right, Tyler. Good.
All right. This was from the Chicago Bears podcast. You can get it on the ESPN Chicago app or wherever you get your podcast. This episode with J-Mac and Pat the Designer features Danny Schachter. It'll be available tomorrow, so be on the lookout for that. But they interviewed Danny Schachter, who is Caleb Williams' former high school coach. He's actually now coaching up at Libertyville. But this was him talking about some of the narratives that he wants to dispel around Caleb Williams heading into the draft season.
I honestly think it's the emotions that he shows that it's absolutely wild to me that people are bashing him for caring so much. Like, how dare he really care about his team? How dare he care about his legacy? How dare he care about these very lofty goals of trying to be, you know, the Heisman was great, but that was not, he wanted to be a national champion. Why? Because he's all about the team. You know, he could care less. I guarantee you he would trade his Heisman in a heartbeat to have a shot to play for the Natty. So when you have those high aspirations and lofty goals and you have those high expectations that I'm Superman and I'm going to get the job done, it really hurts when you fall short. So, you know, I think it takes a lot of guts and courage to show and let out your emotions. And that's a huge mental health thing on top of it, where we should not be bashing a young man for letting out his emotions. We should be saying that's the kind of guy that we should all be to be comfortable enough to let go and show those things from ourselves. I mean, vulnerability is the ultimate strength. So that's, to me, was like the craziest thing, was people bashing a young man for, you know, being vulnerable with his parent. And he didn't care if a million people were watching. You know, that's Caleb. He's true to himself, and those emotions just show his competitive nature and that fire that burns so deep within himself.
And then Danny Schachter also had this to say about how Caleb Williams is perceived by his teammates.
Everybody who knows Caleb and has dealt with him loves him. He is a really good-hearted person. I'll never forget, it was... after his freshman year, going into sophomore year, we were having this big family barbecue, and you know, all these people are inside, yucking it up and having a great time. And you know, I was looking, I was like, "Where's Caleb at right now?" He was out in the front yard, you know, just throwing the ball with one of the little brothers of one of his teammates. And he wasn't doing it because cameras were on him. That's just who he is. Yeah. He cares about other people. He's a man for others. And all of his teammates have always loved him. Is he perfect? No. But he was a lot of fun to coach. You know, you didn't really have to worry too much about anything off the field with him. He's a good young man who cares about others. That's why he has the Caleb Cares Foundation. And he does a lot of great things in the community that maybe don't get as much of a light shine. But, you know, it's easy to have an opinion when you don't know what you're talking about. So a lot of people who are speaking negatively upon him, they just don't know him in any way, shape, or form. And they just see what is being said about him on TV or some of those negative clips that people like to show. I think what you really see is a young man who really cares about his teammates and is going to lay it all out on the field. And you got to give mad love and respect for that.
So all this coming from his former coach, Danny Schachter.
And when this was with Pat the Designer
and Jason McKee. And it just got me thinking, where are all of these narratives about his character even coming from?
That I don't know. I also heard Cap talking about this, and I believe I saw this on Twitter as well, the Brett Coleman story. Mm-hmm. About how he was going to play in the Holiday Bowl, or that was the report, but then he realized that
Basically, so he was going to play in the Holiday Bowl. This was coming from one of his teammates talking to Brett Coleman, who does a lot of different film breakdown, but he was at USC's Pro Day and he was talking to one of Caleb's teammates, and Caleb or his teammate told Brett Coleman that Caleb was going to play in the Holiday Bowl, but then he saw how many quarterbacks were entering the transfer portal, and he wanted Miller Moss, who Caleb's very tight with, he wanted Miller Moss to cement himself as the starter at USC. So he bowed out of the Holiday Bowl so Miller Moss could go and play in that game, kind of showcase himself. And for those who remember that game, Miller Moss went out and threw for 6 touchdowns.
Oh, yeah.
As a result, he pretty much cemented himself as the starter, and no transfers looked at going to USC.
Which is a great, I mean, I'm not disputing the accuracy of that story. I would have been shocked if, for you know, liability reasons or the risk.
I would have been shocked too, but
I would have been shocked if Caleb Williams would have played that game just to put himself in harm's way.
But if I'm remembering correctly also, it took a long time for him to officially declare himself
it did.
Out
you're right. You're
of the Holiday
right
Bowl.
Yeah.
Like, usually you know right away within like a week or so whether or not these big guys are playing in their bowl games.
Or is that kind of him? Is that kind of him controlling, wanting to control the narrative?
It very well could be. I mean, he waited till the deadline to declare for the NFL draft as
correct.
Well. So I'm not saying that this is exactly what happened, why he did bow out of the Holiday Bowl, but it's just something that's been put out there by a teammate of his.
I'm fine with all of these things. Yeah. And it goes back to what we were talking about earlier in the show. The guy's a pro in a lot of different ways, a lot of different definitions of the word. And you asked a question earlier, Tom, like, where is this coming from, right? Like, the kind of the negativity that, I'm going to pronounce it wrong. Danny Schachter, his former high school coach, was talking about here. Where is that negativity coming? It's Facebook posts. It's that nasty set of online contrarianism. It's this idea that... There are a good number of college football fans that maybe it's just fear, but fear the agency that our college football athletes now have because of NIL and that they were gaining because of notoriety and social media. There's agency there. These kids, because in a lot of cases, you're a freshman, you're a starting quarterback, you're still a kid, but you're also, look at what Arch Manning is making the whole thing. Listen. You're a kid, but you're a pro, and you've got to live in both of those worlds. And for years, at least in my opinion, the idea of being an amateur student athlete was absolute nonsense, like pure nonsense. Now we get to live in a world where these kids get to operate out in the open as pros. We get to treat them as such, sure. But the idea that a guy can't show emotion like Schachter's talking about there, paint his fingernails, be an individual, and have some agency in his own, you know, professional career outside of having to go to the team that drafts him, it's ludicrous. It's insane.
I never bought into that so-called narrative that it was symbolic of him being somebody that wasn't going to be a good teammate. Never. I mean, how you choose to show emotion is up to you. How you choose to carry yourself is up to you, as long as you respect and others and you're civil in your interactions with people. I think a lot of that, you know, there's a lot of noise out there. There were people also, don't you remember, that said, you know, that at the bowl game, that one of his teammates was heard saying, "Now we're truly a team," or something. You know, I mean, like, who knows why that was said or who said it and what context it was said. It's all noise.
Look, the thing to me, the only thing that concerns me, and I can't, I'm not a college football scout. I'm not a quarterback expert. I do baseball, right? But I've watched enough. I've covered college football. The only thing that concerns me about Caleb Williams is his propensity to play hero ball a little bit. And kind of off-script stuff on his own, right? And I think enough people have poured back through that USC tape, enough qualified experts like yourself, and have pointed out that that offense needed someone to play hero ball or didn't have another way around it to scoring points, and therefore that's where Caleb Williams ends up playing.
Yeah, I had two concerns. One was height. And the other was being able to play in structure. because that offense, that air raid offense, is basically just backyard winged football.
Sure.
You can't do that in the NFL. And I prefer to have somebody whose height is something that doesn't impede their vision in any way, shape, or form.
What did he end up? He ended up 6'1"?
6'1", which is fine by me. And, okay. And we stood next to, or near next to him in Indianapolis, and that was the first thing I said to these guys. Well, I'm fine with that. 6'1"'s fine by me. But I think that that's going to be the biggest issue for him as he transitions from the collegiate game to the NFL. Can you kind of rein it in and play within the structure that is necessary to succeed at the next level? It doesn't mean that they're going to take all of the creativity away from him and that they're going to, you know, in a sense, neuter him and his, you know, his athletic ability. But you do have to be able to play within the structure of the offense. You can't just go out there and do what he did at USC. And I think he did more of that in 2023 this past year than he did in 2022.
Yeah, looked that way to me. That offensive line obviously had some issues. People have talked about that quite a bit. And looping it back to the Keenan Allen idea of things, you tell me. But Keenan Allen is a guy who is a route runner more than anything else.
Yes.
A guy who understands.
He'll be exactly where he needs to be on third and seven. So you better know where he's going to be and put it where it needs to go.
Which means he's going to find those spaces in the defense, sit himself down and be an open receiver, a willing target, which hopefully means that Caleb Williams will, you know, the fact that he had to play off schedule, a hero ball or whatever, do just fine Keenan. And you don't have to run around crazy and get knocked out by a linebacker.
I think there's enough example from my liking that where he plays fast and within the confines of the offense and gets the ball out quick and and processes things. I'm comfortable with it enough to think that he'll be fine, but it is something that Shane Waldron is going to have to impress upon him very early. But I do believe, and he even said, like, in his interview with Colin Cowherd was, you know, he doesn't want to run. He doesn't like to run. He'd rather sit in the pocket and distribute the football. Mm. So we'll see what happens. But, yeah, that would be my only concern is how do you adapt to a more structured offense in the National Football League versus what they were doing at USC?
To that end, I think the structure that you've put around him offensively kind of helps guide you there.
No doubt.
I can't say one more thing or another about Shane Waldron, but I like the personnel.
Yeah. Tyler, what else you got?
All right, Bill Barnwell put out his perfect fits for the remaining top 20 free agents, and two that stuck out to me were guys that he signaled to the Bears, one of which is Ryan Tannehill, the former quarterback with the Tennessee Titans, and another is Donovan Smith, the left tackle for the Kansas City Chiefs. Are you interested in one, both, or neither?
I like Ryan Tannehill, the thought of Ryan Tannehill being a backup quarterback here. I mean, obviously, he's an accomplished veteran. He would know coming in that his role is to be the backup and to provide a little bit of, I don't know, counseling or experience and mentorship for the young quarterback coming in. I would prefer having someone like that who had a resume versus the group that they have now, guys that really don't have much of a resume.
No, and certainly can't help the way that you'd like a veteran to. Correct me if I'm wrong here, fellas, but Tannehill got a little pouty when they gave the job to Will Levis last year. And I'm not saying he didn't have a reason for it, but wasn't it things got a little stinky in that locker room at times? I feel like I read those headlines, right? And maybe there's a difference. Maybe time passes and Tannehill realizes marketplace is...
Yeah, I mean, I would be shocked. I don't recall that being the case. Doesn't mean it wasn't the case. But look, I would think at this point where nobody has knocked on his door or called repeatedly that he understands the situation. And I would hope if, in fact, that's the route they went, that he would understand that he is there for, you know,
You got to have a willing participant, though, right? Like, you don't want to bring in Ryan Tannehill if he's thinking he can be a starting quarterback.
Yes, and he has to. I mean, he's a smart enough guy to know that if you bring Caleb Williams in as the first overall selection, he's not coming here to compete for the job.
That's so basically, I'm looking right now. He said the change hit hard, but he is willing to help out in whatever capacity.
Oh, my bad. I thought he got a little chesty.
Said that, though, I thought I remember hearing that, too.
I thought I'd remembered reading a report, something like that.
I did a quick Google search here, and you may recall Ryan Tannehill was not pleased when Malik Willis was brought in previously, and he played one of those. He went with the old Brett Favre route where it wasn't his job to train the rookie to take his job, sort of deal.
Yep.
So that was with Malik Willis.
Okay.
Prior to Will Levis. Maybe that's.
It is. It's absolutely what I'm remembering, and not particularly germane to the situation that he'd be in should the Bears sign him. So
who was the other guy?
Mea culpa.
Malik Willis. Malik Remember Willis. They drafted.
No. The other guy that Barnwell said would be a perfect.
No, Donovan Smith, the offensive left tackle from the Kansas City Chiefs. He led the NFL in penalties this past year.
I was just going to say, between him and
isn't he the guy that was going early all playoffs long?
That was Juwan Taylor. That was he was on the other end. Yeah.
Like it is funny that group of bookend tackles, as much as they struggled at times. Now again, that is. You know, Patrick Mahomes is the ultimate deodorant in all situations. Yeah. But that tackle combo was not the world's greatest.
The weirdest thing was they chose not to sign Orlando Brown, but they chose Juwan Taylor instead. Yes. And he could not sit still. He was always off early on those jumps.
I mean, like an hour. It's like he had a different snap count. It was all playoffs.
He was
long.
Doing his own thing.
All playoffs. That was my favorite section of NFL playoff Twitter. It's just all the old linemen and defensive linemen, too, who just tweet, there it is, you went early again. Absolute nonsense. You got to flag that. We think that dozens of guys.
It's crazy.
Just couldn't live with it. I don't know how you... I'm going to ask this here. I don't know, segue it or whatever. Have you completely changed your idea of where the offensive line matters most now? Are, like, we in an era where the inside-out idea of offensive line play is now important than your left tackle blindside guy protecting?
I believe that this crew has unfortunately neglected the center position more than they should have, especially with young quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I think if you polled young quarterbacks, they would be bothered more for pressure that is coming straight up the middle in the middle of their face than from the edge. Because I think they feel that they're athletic enough, most of these guys, that they can evade the rush that's coming from the end. But when it's dirty and it's muddy coming from the middle and you really don't have as many options to escape the rush, I think that and the sight line is really affected. If I was a quarterback, I would be much more bothered by pressure coming from in front of my face than coming off the edge.
I wonder if that's something to think about as we get closer and closer to the draft. You know, the Bears,
for me,
we
have some
capital there.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important.
Center.
It's not just that. It's not just that young quarterbacks, in my opinion, are threatened and bothered more by pressure that is coming from directly in front of them. It's a you want
Drew
somebody
Brees
there.
Hated that.
Hated it. But you also have I want somebody that can set the protection and can identify what's going on and be your quarterback of your offensive line and something that a rookie quarterback can lean on. You don't want an inexperienced center, in my opinion, that is playing in front of an inexperienced quarterback.
I'd also like a guy to be able to move a bit in the run game, you know?
Sure.
And I couldn't say whether or not, you know, you'd know more about it than I do, but obviously Cody Whitehair had the issues with snaps, right, and getting things under shotgun and getting the ball to the quarterback and everything. But at least he could move a little bit from center to go around a guard.
Yeah,
and
he's
find
a guard.
A
he wasn't a center, and they were trying to fit him in that spot. Yeah. And
but I
it
like
just
that mobility.
Work, but
I like that mobility.
Yeah, no doubt. But I just think that in the number of ways that Justin didn't have the infrastructure that hopefully will be there for the next guy, I always felt like, guys, you know, you got to secure that spot. You've got to make sure that your young quarterback is comfortable with the center quarterback exchange, with the protection, with setting protections, all of that stuff. Some veteran quarterbacks handle it themselves. They just look at how a defense is set up, and they're the ones that will set protection. Some instances where you have a young quarterback that's not, you know, he's got 1,000 things going on in his mind, it's easier for a veteran center to be the one, at least until the quarterback is more comfortable and has more experience, to be the one that will set protections and know where the hots are coming and all of that stuff. I think it's an invaluable commodity to have an accomplished veteran center playing in front of a rookie, an inexperienced rookie quarterback.
Can I offer you or sell you on the idea of a good college center who's played a lot of football that will also grow alongside said quarterback.
It would be ideal.
Is that maybe the situation?
Yeah, I mean, it would be ideal if I've got a center who's coming from college, who's an accomplished center, and maybe doesn't take over right away. Maybe it's Ryan Bates, a guy you traded a fifth-round pick for. It's the kid from the Rams who started all 17 games for the Rams last year. But then at some point, when the comfort level is very obvious, then that guy takes over that spot. But it is a position, in my opinion, that needs to be addressed, and it's a solution. It's a problem that needs a solution, a strong solution.
Can I give you two more quick ones here?
Come on. All right.
The NFL is leaving the tush push as a legal play for the 2024 season. Yes, now we know one of the architects of the tush push, Jason Kelce, is retiring. Will the fact that Jason Kelce is out of the league change people's tunes as to whether or not the tush push should be banned?
Should be banned? No, I don't think it should be banned. Look, stop it. I don't think there's anything illegal about it. I mean, just because you can't find a way to slow it down doesn't mean that it should be eliminated. I don't find it to be illegal in any way, shape, or form, and I don't think that it sullies the game of football.
No.
For any reason.
Stop it. It's yeah. Exact same. That's right. How I feel about the tush push the same way I felt about the shift. Bunch of lefties complaining about a shifted infield.
Beat it.
Yeah. Go the other way.
Yeah.
Like, figure it out. It's hard.
Of course it is.
But you're a professional athlete and it's doable. Let's stop
crying. The guys that can do it are going to be handsomely compensated.
And you don't have to. It's not like I'm asking you to lay it down the third baseline 19 times a year. Two would probably do it for you in terms of moving that defense.
Yeah, and by the way, you know, build your offense and find a way to be able to do it successfully the way that the Eagles have as well.
Well,
it's been a tremendous asset.
I can't believe Jason Kelce's retiring. I hadn't heard that. I don't know what it was. I hadn't heard that on any of my social media feeds or anywhere any football is talked about at all. What a great run that those two had.
It's been fabulous.
Just capitalize. That's awesome.
I think you're going to see plenty of Jason Kelce going forward.
Analyst or studio host?
Whatever.
You think?
Yes.
Oh, I'm talking about year one.
Yes.
You would put him in a chair next to Burkhardt or Eagle?
I don't know that he'll be, you know, he'll maybe, you know, on team three or whatever it is. I don't know. I think whatever he chooses to do, there's a good chance he's going to be entertaining.
The network's content god of the NFL and wherever else he wants to. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, and I'm here for it.
All right. One of the stories of the NCAA tournament was Long Beach State getting into the tournament. For those who missed the story, at the beginning of the week, they told their head coach, Don Monson, that he will not return.
Not Dan Monson. Don
after
Monson.
After the
Any
Big
relation?
West tournament.
Not Don Johnson.
I don't believe so.
No, okay. Don Johnson either.
They told him he will not return. So what did he do? He went out and won the Big West tournament and thus was in the NCAA tournament. Now, they did lose to Arizona, so his run is officially over at Long Beach State. However, there was this quote from the athletic director that came out a few hours before they tipped off against Arizona. Quote, this is from Bobby Smitherin, the athletic director at Long Beach State. My belief and hope is that by doing what I did and the timing of it, they would play inspired. And that's what they did.
Oh, BS.
I'm not trying to pat myself on the back, but it worked.
What a dick.
Is Bobby Smitherin the favorite for the March Ass Clown of the Month?
The March Ass Clown of the Month. Yes, he wins going away in unanimous fashion.
With 10 days to go.
He actually takes credit for them getting to the tournament because he inspired them by firing their head coach.
Oh, my God.
Who then went on to stick it to them by making the NCAA tournament as a 4 seed in their conference tournament.
What a small, small man. Like, what are you thinking about?
Do you know, arguably the most famous alum from that school, Long Beach State? California State University, Long Beach?
No.
Steven Spielberg.
I thought he was a USC guy. USC
here,
Film School.
Yeah, he may
Steven
have.
Spielberg,
this
right?
Would have been his undergrad. How about that?
I
just Googled it.
I had no idea. Well,
that dude is there. Did you call him the ass clown of the month?
Yeah.
Sold. I think that's fair.
Sold.
You got my vote.
Mark it down.
What a man.
That's good. Anything else?
That's all we got today.
All right. When we come back, it is the 40th moment in Chicago sports history over the last 50 years that you would like to erase from your memory. That's next.
Waddle and Sylvie share 50 moments over the past 50 years that Chicago sports fans wish they could cut from their memories. Presented by Great Clips. Number 40.
This has been a very cathartic exercise. I think this is the best way to describe it. We've gone through several, you know, different lists of the greatest moments in Chicago sports history over the course of the last several years, but we decided this year what we wanted to do was put together the 50 moments of the last 50 years in Chicago sports history that you would like to remove from your sports memory. Things that you just look back on and go, oh, hell no. Mm. Oh, hell no. Oh, hell no. And number 40, brought to you by our great friends and partners at Great Clips, it's a little something we like to call the back-to-back 50 burgers.
And I should preface this, Waddle, because this was set up. I think, would you agree, the back-to-back 50 burgers was kind of the beginning of the end of the Mark Trestman era?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So prior to the 50 burgers being given up, the Bears lost to the Dolphins in a game
right.
in which Jay Cutler had a couple of turnovers, which led subsequently to a report that Brandon Marshall went on a tirade inside the Bears locker room.
I don't remember that. That's a good point.
That was directed at Jay Cutler and him turning the ball over. Well, Mark Trestman, prior to the back-to-back 50 burgers, addressed that, and that's where we will begin.
That's one that has to be addressed. I don't think that was the case at all yesterday. I didn't hear all of it. I heard a lot about most of it. What I did hear, I did not hear any of that.
Lambeau Field, Green Bay, Wisconsin. They know how to bundle up around here. It's one of those nights. It's 36 degrees and overcast in Wisconsin as Jay Cutler leads his Chicago Bears up the shores of Lake Michigan into Green Bay to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Packers on NBC's Sunday Night Football. On fourth and goal, off the play fake, pass is caught for a touchdown on a fourth down by Brandon Bostic, the number three tight end. Four-man rush, good protection, lots of time, wide open, Jordy Nelson turns it back inside. Jordy Nelson to the end zone. Lambeau leap to follow. Deep, open, caught, touchdown, Jordy Nelson. Two touchdown catches for him tonight. 40 yards here into the stands for the Lambeau leap he goes. He's already gained 142 receiving yards tonight. Screen, plenty of blocking. Look at that blocking for Lacy. And he exploits it. And then picks up more blockers. And goes all the way for a touchdown. 56 yards. You're going to draw up a screen in a clinic. You draw that one. Rodgers already has five touchdown passes. And what a catch! Randall Cobb with Hurst trying to get the ball away from him. But into the end zone, Randall Cobb. Aaron Rodgers. How's that hamstring doing? 42-0. This will be a rough week in the Windy City. And a great night in Green Bay, 55-14.
Brady looking deep into the end zone. The catch made, touchdown. Gronkowski with a great catch. Brady to put it up. He throws, touchdown. The pass to Gronkowski. He's got it. Touchdown. Brady fade to the corner with foul. He's got it. Brady gets time, fires it, completes it to Gronkowski. Fights off Monday, heads for the goal line. Touchdown! Got it! Ruffle being rushed. Down he goes, first sack of the game. Lamar Houston. But Lamar, let's not go overboard on the celebration. Ridiculous celebration. Gronkowski, 2-for-2 in the game. 51-23. Better self-examination, self-scouting, and try and figure out how to turn things around heading for the second half of the season.
I'll just open by saying
what I told our football team tonight at halftime and after the game, that we're not a very good football team right now, obviously. We've descended over the last 3 weeks, and we didn't make any changes or any positive movement after the bye. And that starts with me, and I'll leave it at that.
George, how would you describe your mother's role in this process and her reaction to what's happened?
She's been very supportive. She agrees with the decisions that we've made. She's pissed off. I can't think of a 91-year-old woman that description would apply to, but in this case, I can't think of a more accurate description. She's been on this earth for 8 of the Bears' 9 championships, and she wants more. She feels that it's been too long since the last one, and that dissatisfaction is shared by her children, her grandchildren, and her great-grandchildren. She's fed up with mediocrity. She feels that she and Bears fans everywhere deserve better.
To give, to put this in order a little bit for you, this was the 2014 Chicago Bears season, year 2 of the Mark Trestman experience.
Year last of the Mark Trestman experience.
Yes, the Miami game came in week 7, where they lost to Miami 27-14 to drop to 3-4. The following week, they traveled to New England. So they go to New England and face Tom Brady and Gronk and the rest of the guys. They lose 51-23 in that game. Tom Brady was 30 of 35.
Yeah, he was.
For 354 yards, 5 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions.
5 tutties.
That's when, after that game, I think famously, Mark Trestman said, the only thing we have going for us is we're heading into the bye.
Uh-huh. Correct. Yes.
Coming out of the bye, everyone was expecting them to make some adjustments and have a little come to football Jesus meeting. They come out of the bye. They go to Green Bay and they get beat, as you heard, by the Packers 55-14. And in that game, Aaron Rodgers was 18 for 27 for 315 yards, 6 touchdowns, and no interceptions. So in those two games where they got a 50-burger plus dropped on them, Brady and Rodgers combined for 11 touchdowns and no interceptions and 669 yards, not nice passing.
Can I read
the number one thing we've got going for us right now is we're into the bye.
We did it. We're into the bye.
In his defense, he wasn't wrong.
He wasn't wrong. Do you remember when his opening, we should have known, Connor, in his opening press conference?
Yeah.
Where he says, we're going to have a team that is selfish and undisciplined.
We love ball, right?
He obviously meant to say
we're going to have a team that's selfish and undisciplined.
What? Okay. I mean, like, at that point,
he was a truth teller. He wasn't wrong.
Now,
game on.
Now, I will say that year, his first year, I think they were the number 2 offense in the National Football League.
Top 5, yes. They were very, very good. And I thought things might have been a lot better than that.
This is one of my favorite quotes of all time. We're going to have a team that is selfish and undisciplined.
So
we're going to have a team that's selfish and undisciplined.
How do you make that mistake in your opening press conference?
It was weird, guys. I opened the interview like that, and they didn't seem to blink an eye, so I thought it'd be okay to say in the presser.
Back-to-back 50 burgers.
Can I read for you the Bears drive summary from that 55-14 shellacking hands of the Packers?
After the bye.
Punt, 9 plays, 33 yards. Interception, 3 plays, 0 yards. Punt, 10 plays, 17 yards. That's your first quarter. Punt, 5 plays, 1 yard. Turnover on downs, 11 plays, 55 yards. Turnover on downs, 8 plays, 34 yards. Fumble, 3 plays, 22 yards. Thankfully, end of half. Where he can only imagine that Mark Trestman's message to the team at halftime was is, we're in the second half, guys. Don't worry. I can read the calendar, and we moved on to the second half of things. They opened the third quarter with their first possession being a turnover on downs. I mean, that's just...
Now, I will say this. They found a way to pull themselves up from their bootstraps, or by their bootstraps, the next 2 weeks. They beat Minnesota 21-13, and then they beat Tampa 21-13 as well. Following that with 5 straight losses, and they ended the season at 5-11, and Mark Trestman was fired. But the back-to-back 50 burgers, I don't know how many times that has happened in NFL history where a team gave up more than 50 points in back-to-back games.
By the way, the Packers called off the dogs because Aaron Rodgers had six touchdown passes in the first half.
He only threw 27 passes.
And the startling thing was, as I was going down memory lane, putting these highlights together, the tackling was non-existent. I mean, broken plays all over the place led by Mel Tucker's famous defense there. Everybody was in the wrong position. These were some of the easiest touchdowns you will ever see a team in the NFL score.
That's Chris Conte, right, in the back end of things, right? And it's just a whole... All right, can you... each team, the Bears, Patriots, and Packers, all had backup quarterbacks take snaps and register on the stat sheet.
Okay, I gotcha.
Can you name...
Yes, I can.
All... What is that?
Do you have any type of reward for me, if in fact,
Io DeSumo signed basketball. For
there you
me.
Go. You could also get
it. Didn't you have like a hand, left of this cup didn't you coffee. Have like didn't you have like a bag of nuts
I,
over there?
I son? Ate my bag of nuts.
You did. Yeah. So no, you I don't have it. Any nuts to share.
I told you you can have half of this quarter.
I don't
cup
want
of coffee
that. I want some. Okay, let me see
you
if I can get
bell.
It.
If you want the
that's
bell,
that's the hall bell. Anytime somebody called. Not Hall, not H-A-L-L, H-A-U-L. Anytime somebody called to trade the first pick for the Hall.
And now when that caller calls again, you ring it, it's the Shame bell.
The Shame, yes.
This is Shame.
Okay, so the backup quarterback for New England at that time is Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yes, the backup quarterback.
The most handsome man in the NFL who will serve his 2-game suspension for taking too many handsome pills this offseason.
Jimmy went 3-for-3 for 22 yards against the Bears.
He also was sacked by Lamar Houston. Who then immediately
tore
his ACL, celebrating that sack down 30.
Thank you, Mellor. That is I missed that. Like to add injury to insult.
It's just fantastic.
I mean, it's just unbelievable.
I mean, I felt bad for Lamar Houston. Nice guy.
It's backup quarterback for the Bears, Jimmy Clausen.
Jimmy Clausen. Yes. And that was the season where was it the game against the Vikings? Was the last game of the year, second to last? Where they started
second to last was Detroit, where he started.
Yes. And then he got hurt or was just so bad that they couldn't stand it. And then Jay started the final game, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So Jimmy
and they
Clausen.
Had some guys on that team, too. Like, they had Brandon Marshall. They had Alshon Jeffrey. They had Matt Forte. They had Martellus Bennett. Like, that was a team with dudes.
It should not have been that bad.
And let me hit the trifecta with the backup quarterback for Green Bay is Matt Flynn.
Matt Flynn.
Yes, who they spent a king's ransom on, right, in free agency?
Seattle spent
the large amount of money
on Matt Flynn.
That's right.
Only to bench him for a third-round pick in Russell Wilson.
This was actually Matt Flynn's second go-round with the Packers because he had already been in Seattle. This Patriots team that put 50 on the Bears, they went on to beat the Seattle Seahawks in the Super Bowl that year.
I see.
Matt Flynn, LSU?
Yes.
And he beat Ohio State in a national title, and I was at that game.
By the way, I have the...
Is that a question or is that a proclamation?
I had to make sure it was Matt Flynn at quarterback.
Was at that game?
First job out of college. I'm not sure exactly how attentive I was at that game, but I was working that game. I covered that game.
By the way, I have the only other team to allow back-to-back 50-point games.
In NFL history.
This is a Tungsten Armo Doyle type answer
beautiful.
To get.
We should be laying some money on it then, Tyler,
What was that?
Armo Doyle. See? Connor.
I like that.
Connor gets that joke. Baseball joking.
What is it?
What? Tungsten Armo Doyle?
Yeah, what is that?
It's a baseball reference.
It's actually a meme. Actually, that would add another layer if Shohei Ohtani was using that as an alias to make wagers.
I hope that's the case. His alias at the team hotel, too. He's Tungsten Armo Doyle. Yeah, that's exactly it.
Okay, like, we just had
some funny nerd notes I'm giving you right here.
Nerd overdose right there.
The liner notes for this show are going to be particularly funny to a lot of nerd fans.
Okay.
Yeah. Those get issued later. Anyway, who's the other team?
It was the 1923 Rochester Jeffersons.
The only other team in NFL history to give up back-to-back 50-point games.
1923 Rochester Jeffersons.
And that is the reason
why Bears.
The back-to-back 50 burgers in the 2014 season with the Chicago Bears is the 40th moment in our list of 50 moments of the last 50 years in Chicago sports history that we would like to cut from our memories, brought to you by our great friends and partners at Great Clips. That's unbelievable. By the way, here's another trivia question for you. We talked about the game before the first 50 burger was a game against the Miami Dolphins, correct?
Yes.
Would anybody like to venture a guess as to who the starting quarterback for the Dolphins was in that game?
That
here's
was
a hint.
Ryan.
This is Tannehill?
Yes, it was.
Yes, it was.
Yes,
Texas
it
A&M
was.
Zone Ryan Tannehill.
How about that?
I forgot about that. But who was backing up Ryan Tannehill?
I have no idea.
Vinny Testaverde.
Was he?
No.
I have no idea.
He's ageless. So
when we come back, I don't know what we're going to do, but at the top of the hour, Jeff Joniak's going to join us. That's next.
ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. You're listening to Waddle and Sylvie. Watch us and join the chat. Follow ESPN 1000 Chicago on twitch.tv or the Twitch app.
It's Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000. Sylvie's out. I'm Connor.
Hi, Connor.
Hanging out for a little while. I got some free time before the baseball season starts, so I figured I'd come on down
this way. I thought the baseball season started. There was two games yesterday morning and this morning.
No, we're in
that
gray area.
Then they go back to the exhibition
season. Now it's off again. It was on, and now it's off again. It's like the puck in a craps game. On and off, and you got to make sure that you're betting the right way.
I don't know how to play craps.
It's a lot of fun, and I would recommend. I swore off blackjack at the casinos a long time ago after an epic stretch of cold cards.
Yeah.
Went over to playing craps and haven't gone back since.
Okay.
You got to be able to, you got to be willing to put a lot of money out initially in craps. And then, you know, you can lose that very quickly. Somebody rolls a seven or something like that after you get your point. But otherwise, I think it's a really fun game.
Okay. That's what I hear, but it sounds like somebody has tried to explain it to me, and I just kind of, my eyes rolled in the back of my head, and I lost interest, and I just passed out.
There's a lot of ways to play it. There's a lot of complications to the game, but there's a lot of simple ways to play it, too. I'm a simple man, so I play it a simple way, and you get the table camaraderie. You know, somebody rolling a lot of points, and everybody's high-fiving and yelling and screaming, and then the drinks come over. And,
you know it's a great question to ask Joniak at the top of the hour, whether
craps
or not
player?
When he goes, does he go to the casinos, and when he does he play craps?
Hmm.
I can see Joniak just... just narrating how the game is unfolding.
Can
you see Joni?
Doing
play by play at a craps table.
Doing the hype. Snap to the croupier.
Yeah.
Right. Ready to
Connor,
go.
Connor, you are ridiculous.
6 points in a row, and there it is. So there's an update to one of the biggest stories in baseball here. Minor update, but I think worth talking about some. We mentioned the Shohei Ohtani story. We were talking with Jesse Rogers earlier in the show. ESPN's investigative arm, Tisha Thompson, the specific reporter, has been doing a lot of work on this. And about an hour ago, a small update got issued. I think what's important here, Waddle, though, is the nuance in this story, right? The fact that initially, the interpreter, Ipe Mizuhara, who I apologize if I'm mispronouncing the names wrong. It's not my specialty. He had said that Shohei did pay off his gambling debts for him. Then,
so
that
why do you
statement
think,
was revoked.
Right. Why do you believe that he revoked that statement?
I don't know. I don't know, but I have to imagine it's because of there being consequences about that statement, not just for Mizuhara.
Well, listen, okay, if your interpreter is willing to dive on the grenade for you in the manner in which, I had some gambling issues and Shohei covered my mark.
In a way that may have been illegal, like Jesse talked about earlier. Like paying off someone else's gambling debt in a state where gambling isn't legal isn't legal.
But if that is diving on a grenade, like what is him then reversing course and saying that, or somebody reversing course and saying, hey, he just stole $4.5 million.
That's the key here, right? It's not
Mizuhara. This is a bigger crime.
Who's recanting that kind of talk. It's a statement by Ohtani's people, and I think we're kind of sussing that out. So it's just it's a couple of sentences here. It's Tisha Thompson on ESPN. She says, representatives of Los Angeles Dodgers superstar Shohei Ohtani have contacted law enforcement authorities and asked them to investigate a massive theft of money from the player. A source with direct knowledge told ESPN on Thursday. The source declined to say which agency had been contacted. A Major League Baseball source told ESPN on Thursday that the league has not been contacted by federal authorities. The source said MLB's next step would be to gather facts
which could take time in light of the ongoing federal investigation. And then it goes back to kind of rehash the rest of the story as we know it. Now, there's a lot to work on here. There's a lot more that's going
to
come out.
Do you think they decide to play a third game in Seoul just to try to take your attention away?
They'd have to,
hey, everybody, what we've decided to do is play another one tomorrow morning.
Maybe they'd have to turn planes around, right?
Okay. Oh, sorry. Okay.
To do that whole thing.
Yeah, maybe they do.
Let's play well, two it would in be a very worthy, weird
you
direction.
It would be worth turning a plane around if you could bury the story.
If you're Major League Baseball, yeah. Yes. I think you're absolutely fine with contacting the charters mid-flight and saying, fellas, head back.
Maybe they throw a quick three-starter. They throw a quick two-game set together in Japan.
Yes.
Stop on by.
There you go.
They're barnstorming.
I like to, when I'm in with you, when I'm hanging out, I like to bring a list if I can, because I like a good
list.
I've got a list for you. I've got a list. And I'll sum it up this way. It's a list of the top 15 paid players in Major League Baseball in 2024.
Are we going by
this is full compensation, deferred compensation?
This
is the money they'll get from their teams, not counting deferred money, plus endorsements that these players are getting.
Plus endorsements.
Right? So I'm going to just real quickly here, because I know we're up against it, I'll run through some names here. From 15 on up, Giancarlo Stanton, Bryce Harper, Juan Soto, Carlos Correa, Garrett Cole, Anthony Rendon, Corey Seager, Jacob DeGrom,
and
Mike Trout's at 7, Jose Altuve at 6,
Andrew Benintendi,
Justin Verlander at 5, Aaron Judge at 4. Your top three, Max Scherzer. He's pulling in $52 million in salary and $2 million in endorsements. Number two, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, $55 million in salary, $5 million.
What did that get him today? What, he gave up like nine runs?
He got shellacked.
He didn't get any
first. Shohei Ohtani is the highest paid player in baseball in 2024.
Despite deferring.
His salary is $2 million.
Yes.
And according to this piece on Sportico.com, he will bring in $65 million in endorsements this year.
No, make that 61 minus the $4 million that he just sent.
Covering 60, those, that's past cost.
He sent $4.5 million to Knuckles. And
checks are on the way.
Valley.
He earns 60 more in endorsements than the next highest endorsed player.
Hence the reason why Major League Baseball wants to make sure that they